I'm Caroline Jones, the college archivist. And it's now 100 years since Wellington played its first hockey matches against other schools, back in 1926. So to commemorate that centenary, I've been looking into the history and development of hockey at college. Later we'll be talking to some of the people involved in that story, both in the past and currently. But first, I'd like to give you a brief history of hockey at Wellington. So sports played with sticks, the forerunners of hockey, have been known since at least 500 BCE. But the modern game evolved in Britain in the 19th century. The first known club was formed in London in 1849, and the Hockey Association was founded in 1876. Our school opened in 1859, and we know that hockey was played within the first 10 years, but it wasn't taken very seriously. It was played for a few weeks a year, initially at the start of the Michaelmas term, when it was considered too hot for rugby to start. Later, that moved to the Lent term, after the rugby season had finished. By the late 1870s, hockey had fizzled out because there was a letter to the Wellingtonian campaigning for it to start again. But that campaign was not immediately successful. In fact, in 1881, there was another letter ridiculing hockey. What a noble game is hockey! Let us proceed even further and devote our energies to the noble science of that time-honoured game of marbles. Let us try prisoner's base or hide-and-seek, I spy or spinning tops. Or let us recall the days of our childhood by careering over the green expanse of turf, fondly imagining ourselves to be horses. However, the pressure continued, and in 1886 hockey did start up again. We have a record of an inter-house match that year in which the Anglesey beat the Line Dock. And there was also an annual match in which the school played the teachers. By this time, many old Wellingtonians were playing hockey at university or in the army. But it was still very much a sideline at Wellington. Any attempt to give it more time was refused because it would interfere with the rugby. Nevertheless, in the 1890s, the college did play a few external matches, but not against other schools. Their opponents were gentlemen's elevens or Oxbridge colleges. In 1897, a family of Wellingtonians presented a silver cup which the school sports committee decided should be used as a house challenge cup for hockey. The yearbook said, "There is very much to be said for hockey. It is an excellent game for the months of February and March, as it can be played on so many days when rugby is an impossibility." But by the next year, enthusiasm had waned again, and the cup was instead used for cross-country running. You can still see that cup, by the way, in one of the dining hall display cases. It's called the Lambton Cup, and it has seven little silver lambs around the stem. But back to hockey. It carried on, but still informally, as a pastime. Even in 1906, the yearbook again compared hockey to marbles and hopscotch. This was in contrast to some other public schools, such as Marlborough, where hockey had really taken off and was taken seriously. Things gradually changed over the course of the First World War, but the real change came when Terence Manser joined the teaching staff in 1924. He'd been a pupil at Marlborough and then an England hockey international. With his encouragement, hockey really started to take off at Wellington. And, as I mentioned at the beginning, in 1926 we played our first matches against other schools. We actually won them too. We beat Tunbridge by 6-0 and Haileybury 2-1. Also that year, the school acquired the Derby Field, and that meant that much more hockey could be played because hockey and rugby teams were no longer competing for time on big side. Of course, at that time, all hockey was played on grass. The modern hard surfaces were unknown. Mr. Manser left in 1933, but he had really changed the status of hockey at Wellington, and of course, our Manser pitch is fittingly named after him. The following year, the yearbook finally announced that the Lent term would henceforth be devoted to hockey, apart from new boys who would play a little rugby so that they became familiar with it before the next winter. The yearbook also gave the opinion that hockey is played with a great deal of enthusiasm and a good deal of skill throughout the school. Wellington's first overseas hockey tour took place in 1936, somewhat surprisingly, to Germany. The team played games in Dresden, Leipzig and Düsseldorf. It's really interesting to read their impressions of the country under Nazi rule. the write-up in the Wellingtonian picks up on how we were shown some Jews who were still allowed to trade in fur. This was to disprove any rumours we might have heard. Nobody was very convinced. The report summed up, "We came back very impressed with the Germans' friendliness, their childish faith in Hitler, their desire to make us think unkindly of the French, and their firm belief in the odd theory that because each German individual had no desire to fight, the German nation would never declare war." Of course, the war did take place, and it put paid to more international tours for many years. By the 1950s, hockey was so established in the Lent term at Wellington that the Wellingtonian reported in 1952, an informal rugby club was started this term for those who do not play hockey. Let us hope that this arrangement will be continued later this year, without, of course, interfering with hockey. It wasn't long, though, before there are comments about the difficulty of people finding time for both hockey and another popular sport, rackets. In 1968, the Rackets Report stated that the poor results were due mainly to a lack of practice, and this was caused by the clash with hockey. Five of the six players in the three pairs were in hockey teams, and on the whole, they were not prepared to find the extra time necessary to improve their rackets. In the mid-1960s, hockey was at a low point at Wellington. They hadn't won a match against another school for 2 years. But by 1968, captained by Hugh Potter and coached by teachers such as David Mordaunt, Mike Huxtable, Peter Willey and John Martin, they were improving, and this continued into the 1970s. That's where we're going to take up the story with our first guest, Mike Borden, who joined Wellington as a teacher in 1972.
Okay, so thank you so much for coming in today to chat about your everything you remember about hockey at Wellington. So you arrived at Wellington in 1972.
Correct.
To teach?
Maths.
Maths, okay. And what state would you say that Wellington hockey was in when you arrived in the
Very
early
good. 70s? I mean, it had got a good reputation. I sort of first encountered it when I was at Cambridge, when we came down on Cambridge University Wanderers Tours, which went around a circuit of six schools in the Easter holidays, or Easter holidays from Cambridge, but obviously we were in term here. And Wellington was always the first fixture of that tour. So, and they usually produced a good side. I think when I came, Rodney Sturgeon was either running it or had just packed up running the hockey. And then he handed it over to JD, John Martin, who ran it up until 1976. Mm-hmm. And he then went off to Australia for a bit, and I took it over. So the first year, I'd been running the junior Colts until then. So my first year of running the first 11 was 1977, and that's when I became master in charge of hockey. Yeah.
That's interesting because when I look back through the yearbook and Wellingtonian, certainly in the late 50s and a lot of the 60s, they felt that they were in the doldrums and they weren't really doing very well. Mm. But perhaps the staff members you've just mentioned had managed to bring up the standard.
I think I arrived just after Frank Fisher, and Frank Fisher improved the general standard of the school. And, of course, he'd got a hockey blue himself. Mm-hmm. So he was very keen that hockey should be. And he started appointing, he'd obviously, I don't know whether JD had been appointed by him or by his predecessor, but then Adrian Garner had been appointed, who was a Cambridge Blue, and then I came. And so he was quite keen to get some good hockey players in. And I think the standard of hockey did then start improving. And one of the reasons was that we were beginning to get more people on the staff who had been hockey players themselves, not necessarily good hockey players, but were interested in hockey. I mentioned Adrian Garn. Norman Porter had arrived, who'd played for Scotland. Chris Potter was here, Roger Auger, Jim Dewes, Tim Head, Glenn Waugh, amongst others. Yeah. And
these are famous names.
Yes. Well, they were all, very, in their own way, very good coaches. And I think one of the things at that stage which really improved the standard of hockey at Wellington was when Norman Porter arrived, and he ran the Yearlings 11. And at that stage, probably less than 50% of the boys in the school had played hockey at their prep schools. Mm. What happened then is always his ambition that by the end of the first term, first hockey term, he would have got at least 5 or 6 people in the Yearlings first 11 who had not played hockey before. So he had coached up basically the good games players who hadn't met the sport before. And so most years, by the end of that term, he'd got obviously 5 or 6 who had played before and virtually an equal number.
So you've just mentioned hockey term. So we're talking about Michaelmas being rugby term and Lent being the hockey
it
term.
It was very much then, the major sports were rugby, hockey, cricket.
Yes.
In those terms. And it was interesting because prior to coming here, I taught at Charterhouse and where they did football. But when I was at Charterhouse, they only played football for the first term, but kept playing until halfway through the second term, which is when they could play their Eton match, because Eton didn't do football in their first term. And so I was running the first 11 at Charterhouse and had to play an A11 through the first half of the term. And then, the good soccer players who were also hockey players would join us half term.
So during the hockey term, would everybody in school play hockey?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the essential, the major difference between then and now. There were a few people who played football, but there was no football under the age of 16. So it meant that we had 3 years of being able to, having introduced these new boys to the game of hockey, 3 years to actually make them into quite good hockey players. And nearly always, in fact, virtually always, they kept going. And then in the last 2 years, anyone who wasn't any good at hockey was allowed to go and play some football. And there's a slight difference as I drove in today, and all I could see was football pitches all over turf, whereas in the old days you'd have seen hockey pitches all over there. Mm.
In the written sources, there's sometimes complaints that people have demands on their time from rackets or squash, and that's digging into their hockey time. Was that a
well?
Issue?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of good, some of our best hockey players were very good rackets players, people like Tim Cockcroft and James, the Mallinson family. They were all hockey players and rackets. And so we managed to, there were odd occasions, if they got a rackets match, they'd do the rackets match. And usually those were midweek and most of the hockey matches were on a Saturday. But, given the fact that, Chris Potter was also involved in the rackets and also ran the second 11 hockey. And so I don't think that wasn't a problem when we were here. And the other thing is that rugby sevens was very much something that happened purely on Sundays. and they might train, might do something once a week. But we got all the best games players. And so your rugby three quarters, for instance, who would obviously usually make up a lot of the rugby sevens teams, would be playing for us during the week. And then they'd just go off and play on the competitions on Sundays until Rossin Park, which was right at the end of term.
Do you think rugby was still seen as the number one sport, more prestigious?
Yes, I think all three sports, for most of the time I was here, were seen equally, you know. The other thing is that towards the end of the time, artificial pitches came in. And suddenly that it was terrific for the advance, the improving of hockey at the school.
That's interesting. Going back to what you say about the number of teams that you were turning out, in an article written for the 50-year jubilee of hockey in 1976, it said the most marked feature of the post-war years has been the great increase in the number of inter-school matches now played at all levels, from first 11 to yearlings, with no fewer than 12 teams playing against Marlborough on the same day.
Yeah. That year, well, as I said, but we actually got up to 20 against Radley.
That's amazing. You know,
and
had you yourself played hockey at school?
Yeah. Yes, I was at Dean Close, which is a very good hockey school.
Mm. So I think you've already touched on some of the elements of the success, it being that all those, yeah, talented people who were willing to coach teams, and the fact that, yes, you would get them from a young age, basically, and really concentrate on bringing the new players up. Is there anything else that you think is important in coaching hockey?
You're always looking at teachers, people who have infectious enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I remember one of my colleagues, Richard Coleman, who certainly wouldn't describe himself as a games player, but he ran the third 11 hockey for many years. You know, virtually everyone in, or a large percentage of the common room, would be out on a Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday afternoon blowing a whistle, however incompetently. But, you know, they were doing a job, and as I said, their enthusiasm was picked up by the boys. And while I was here, lists of schools we played matches against.
Yes.
And they basically were Magdalen College School, Teddy's, St Edward's, Oxford, Cranleigh, Reeds, Charterhouse, Tunbridge, Marlborough and Radley were the sort of eight schools. Mm-hmm. But then at the first 11 level, we played against the Oxford Occasionals and the Cambridge Wanderers came down. We played against the old Wellingtonians, and we always had a team came down from Surbiton and another team came down from Cheam. And then things started changing really in the mid-80s, and that really was with the advent of artificial surfaces coming in. We weren't the first school, but we were amongst the first of the schools to get an artificial pitch.
Was that the Mansa pitch?
The Mansa pitch.
Okay.
And that really, suddenly, the standard of hockey improved. At the same time, there were competitions nationally being set up. And we played in the first one in, I think, 1986, where we had a good under-16 side. And we went up to the national, we qualified, you had to qualify through being, I think two went through from Berkshire. So it was often Bradfield and ourselves would go through. Then we had to compete with the Surrey schools, et cetera, Surrey, Hampshire, et cetera. And if you got through that level, then you would go up to the national finals in Birmingham. And we took a side up there, under 16s, and Norman Porter and myself took them up there. And they did very well and, in fact, lost in the final. It was at that stage I thought, we've got a really good side. What are we going to do about it? And So at that stage, I started planning ahead for our first big overseas tour. Because up until now, I mean, we had the term time fixtures, and then at Easter, we would go to the public schools hockey festival in Oxford, or occasionally we might go to either The Hague or Bloemendaal, Holland, for tours there.
Yes.
But what I then did was organise this tour, which went in 1988 to Zimbabwe, and we went on a three-week tour out there. Really, we saw a good team coming through, and we wanted to make the use of that, and you know, it was terrific taking them. I mean, we were such a good team that we, on that tour, as well as playing against the schools there, we played three matches against the Zimbabwe schools team, or Zimbabwe under 19 team.
Okay.
And we drew two of those and we lost the last one. But I mean, we were able to compete.
That's
actually
very good.
The other thing is ironical that two of our best players, the captain in 1988, a chap called Ollie Benkert, and he and Phil Irons had both been playing hockey for the first 11, but they were in the England under 18 team, which went on a tour, I think, to Australia. So we were deprived of a couple of our, you know, good players, and still were able to go over there. And
excellent. I was going to ask about tours, actually, because I noticed that they became, yes, more frequent during your time. So you feel that they also have a benefit in raising the standard?
Well, I think so, yes. Because you, in general, on those, you played against players who were playing a different type of hockey. I mean, going to Holland was always difficult because they were, you know, super players. And of course, initially that was all on grass, and then eventually it became, on AstroTurf. And then the other thing is success breeds success, and we did, and we were very lucky towards the end of my time, having Glenn Waugh's son, Bill Waugh, in the team. Mm-hmm. And he played, he came on that first tour to Zimbabwe as a 14-year-old, and he played 4 years in the first 11.
Is that unusual to be on
to
the
be
first
for 4 years? Yes.
Yeah.
Because normally, you know, the yearlings, junior colts, mm-hmm. and then 2 years in the first 11.
Yeah.
If you had a really good player at under 16 level, you would say, right, then he might move. But it was the only time I encountered where someone came up really in the junior colts year mm-hmm. and played in the first 11. And of course, he captained the England under 16 team and the under 18 team, and then went on and played in the Sydney Olympics. Nice. And if you've got someone as dominant as that, it is, you know, it's fascinating. He scored a lot of goals himself, and you can carry a few passengers when you have someone as good as that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in his first year, we played in, and I think we got to the final of the under 18 National Cup, and he got injured, but we still played him. I think he got injured in the semi-final, but we played him in the final because he was still, even as a 14, 15-year-old, he was still a very dominant personality. And, you know, him playing on one leg rather than two was better than, you know, someone else. So
to encourage his teammates and intimidate the opposition.
Well, I don't know whether he played centre-half most of the time. Whether he did in his first year, I can't remember. Probably someone else was playing, but he would have played in the defence somewhere. Mm-hmm. But,
So you, Another thing that I noted that you'd mentioned is that it said by 1990, the team, coached by Mike Borden, had been five times in the last 5 years to the national semi-finals or finals of the Nationwide Anglia Hockey Tournament. So, yes, that was really taking off.
I'd have to... The one thing I would say there, J.D. Martin, who, you know, if I was running hockey, but when he came back from Australia, he then came and joined me. So we had probably 13 or 14 years of actually running the first 11 between us.
Okay.
And I was master in charge of hockey, but I felt my role was obviously running the first 11, but also being interested in all the other teams that were going on, et cetera. But he was an excellent coach and, you know, a better coach than I was. And he was very good half-time talks. He didn't say very much, but he'd just come on. He'd make about 2 points. You know, he'd spotted something during, you know, the first half that was going on. He would just come on and say a couple of things at half-time, and they were the right things to be said. And, you know, as I say, he was a, you know, fantastic bloke to work with.
Did you have any involvement with girls' hockey?
I think I ran, for 1 year, I ran girls' hockey. Mm-hmm. And it was just...
They only had one house to draw on, so it's much
and,
harder,
you
isn't
know,
it?
There were only about 20, and we weren't very successful.
Okay.
And I ran the girls' hockey for a year, and then someone else did it. I wasn't very successful with them. They, you know, I think they only had, I think I remember Phil Arns' sister was the best player in the team, and but virtually the only player in the team. One who now I can't remember when that was, but back in the early years, and obviously things have changed enormously since then. But as I said, absolutely had, you know, they were only taking men in the sixth form.
Yes, and very small pool of girls.
So you wouldn't get anyone, if anyone had been really good at sport at that stage at their girls' school, they would have stayed there because they would, you know, our girls' sport was not very good initially.
Yes.
Partly by numbers and partly because we didn't get any good players, you know, coming in. Mm. Yeah.
So perhaps we could talk now about the technical changes with the different pitches and then how that... I mean, people tell me that it's just a completely different game now.
It is a different game. Mm-hmm. It's a far better game to go. I think the biggest... You know, once we had our AstroTurf, and we luckily having nights, it meant that one group would go on at 2 o'clock, another at 3 o'clock, another at 4 o'clock, another at 5 o'clock. So it goes through to six on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And of course, this suddenly wasn't very popular because housemasters didn't know where their boys were. You know, they knew everywhere. They'd all be out from 2:30 to 4 o'clock, and then. Mm. But now, you know, someone wasn't going on till 5 o'clock, and therefore they were in the house and probably making a noise, etc. So, and of course, once people started playing on AstroTurf, then they didn't want to play on grass. On a Saturday, we'd play four matches at home on the AstroTurf, and there would probably be four matches away on the AstroTurf. But all the other teams who were not very skillful had to play on the bad pitches and therefore didn't, whereas they came onto the artificial pitches, you know, for the house matches and things, and found it was an easier game for them to play, you know, easier to stop the ball and that sort of thing. So then people got less interested in playing on grass and that is why, you know, it kept going the whole time I was here because we only had the one pitch. You know, it's changed. And therefore, the masses can't be catered for. Mm. And that is why suddenly, you know, your not very good games player is going to get more fun kicking a football around than he is on a bad grass hockey pitch. And then, of course, I think the other thing I noticed is that coming back here and seeing, obviously, rugby sevens is very much a major part of the second term, whereas, I mean, we would go to Rosslyn Park and we'd often, you know, compete in the final, get, you know, do very well there. And the best game players in the school at those days would play rugby, hockey and cricket. So suddenly a lot of the best rugby players kept playing rugby sevens, so they were out of it. And of course, because of that also, then football started at a lower age, you know, 13, 14 when they arrived. And of course, if you've got a good games player and he's been at his, hadn't played hockey before, and he'd been in his prep school first slum, well, he'd keep playing football. Mm. And it was, therefore, you'd lost that thing, the sort of Norman Porter touch of being able to produce good hockey players.
Have the technical innovations led to changes in the rules?
Oh, yeah, yes, there have been. Now, no offside. The obstruction rules are completely different. Occasionally meet up people I played with who, obviously, I've kept up with hockey through schools and they haven't seen much. And we go along and watch a match. You can't do that. You'll see. You know, the sticks rule and all these sort of things.
Yes.
Offside, obstruction. So it is, you know, completely different. But,
are you still in touch with people that you knew from hockey?
Yes, I am. Yes. And I think, I mean, you do get to know people when you're running a team, and especially when you go on these taking tours abroad, etc. Mm.
That's the end of my questions. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to
know. I think that's just about it. No doubt when I drive home, I'll probably think of, I should have said that, but
it's interesting, and it's made me think of some more things that I must ask the current teachers and players,
yes.
You know, yeah. To compare. Okay, so now we're going to bring our podcast up to date by talking to some of the teachers and students who are active in Wellington Hockey today. So thank you very much to you all for being here, giving up your time. Could I ask you all to introduce yourselves, please?
Hi there, I'm Gareth Carr. I've been at Wellington since 2008 officially as a master in charge of hockey, and I coached or first came to Wellington 2007 and did a term of girls hockey coaching. I now sort of oversee largely what Rob does. Rob has got the reins at the moment as head of hockey development, and I'm a housemaster of the Stanley and still very much involved in the boys and the girls first 11.
And then Rob Farrington, head of hockey development, been here just after COVID now since 2020. And just really trying to move the program forward from what it was and keep trying to advance it every year.
I'm Otty, and I'm a pupil here at Wellington, and I'm the girls' first team hockey captain for the 2025-26 season, and I've been at the college since year 9 now, so just after Mr. Farrington joined, and yeah.
Brilliant, thank you. Rob and Mike, had you played hockey at school yourselves?
I was at a state school to begin with, and then went to a private school called Whitgift School after that. Whitgift School has gone on to become one of the sort of the best boys hockey schools, but again, that sort of program built over a number of years.
I actually went to school in South Africa at a school called Maritzburg College. Had to make a choice between hockey and rugby pretty early on, so I played a little bit of rugby in the first couple of years, but then switched to hockey, and sort of since 2003 then used to spend a winter in South Africa and the winter in the UK playing hockey, whilst also representing South Africa over a 11-year period, I believe.
Uh-huh. How about you? Had you, Otty, played hockey before you came to Wellington?
Yeah, so I started hockey back when I'd say I was in literally very young, very year two maybe.
Oh gosh.
Like very young at my prep school. And I joined a club, a local club around me there, and I've kept up with hockey ever since, moving clubs to, I now play for Surbiton Hockey Club, which Mr. Farrington does play for as well. So connections are quite good as well. So yeah, I played hockey ever since.
Brilliant. Okay, so would it surprise you all to know that in the 19th century, hockey at Wellington was a game only played very informally. Within college, there were no external matches. It was just played for a few weeks a year when it didn't interfere with rugby.
No, I wouldn't say that's a surprise at all. And actually, I was quite surprised when to learn that we're in the 100th year of Wellington hockey. It seems to have been around for a while. So yeah.
In fact, in 1877, a letter to the Wellingtonian made fun of hockey. It said it was a noble game on a par with marbles, hide and seek, I spy, or pretending to be a horse. Otty, would you say, do you still feel like there's a hierarchy of sports at Wellington?
I'd say naturally there is one, considering Wellington was a boys' school at first and their main school sport being rugby. But I think as the years have progressed with girls being included with the college, hockey has become one of those main sports that also show the development of girls at the school, at the college even. And yeah, there may be that little bit of hierarchy still, but I think that's always going to be probably the case for the college. And but I think as the years keep developing, especially with hockey, like it's really it's catching up very quickly. And in the years to come, it will hopefully maybe be very equal. But I still think there will always be that longer ongoing history of the college still being that hierarchy of maybe rugby. But like I said, hopefully as the years come and as hockey is especially being more successful, it shows the development in that girls' sport.
Sure, yeah. But how about hockey as a boys' sport, guys?
I mean, I think we've done sort of reasonably well, and it's one of the only schools, the only sports really here, I think, where we have national representation. We certainly have over the last few years at boys and girls national finals. There's no hiding the fact that our hockey program has got smaller in the boys' side of things, but the girls' side has grown and grown and grown now. But we still, have had national representation when it comes to the boys. So keeping that smaller side of things going. I know when I first took over, I can still remember the first few days of the Len term, and you had 110 boys down, some of which have never held a hockey stick before, trying to teach them to play hockey and get them into 5 or 6 yearlings hockey teams. It was quite challenging. So we don't have that challenge anymore, from trying to sort out those sorts of numbers. But our boys' hockey, particularly indoor hockey, is still really strong. And in recent years, the appearances at national finals shows that although our numbers are down, the quality is still there. I don't know, Rob, I mean, you've seen it firsthand. So.
No, I think also it's maybe cricket with the girls is getting better, which will become a bit more like genuine co-ed team sport. I think that's the real success of the hockey at the moment, where the boys' first team and the girls' first team can train together. They can do lots of things together, and it's a genuine co-ed sport, which is also wider than just outside the school in the sport in general. But as Otty says, I think my challenge personally is trying to lead the coaching has always been to bring the girls' first team up to the same social hierarchy level as the boys' first 15, which is held at such a high status at Wellington. So,
sure. Yeah, thank you. So the reason we're doing this podcast is that it's 100 years since Wellington started to play matches against other schools. In 1926, we played against Tunbridge and Haileybury, and we managed to beat both of them. So could you tell our listeners what our hockey season looks like nowadays? How many inter-school matches?
Huge, really. The girls will have the first term up, we'll have about 12 fixtures on the Saturday blocks. We then enter the cup competitions, 14, 16s and 18s, and some indoor as well. The boys will then have their sort of main block fixtures in the Lent term. We still play Harrow. Haven't played Tunbridge in a while, actually, for the boys. And then again, they have some indoor as well as all the cup competitions. So typically, as a first team, boys or girls, they'll play 20, 25 games a season. Yeah, and it's pretty full on, pretty packed.
Okay. Otty, what's the high point of the season for you, do you think?
This season?
Okay.
Well, every year that I've played a hockey, we've had some great highlights with, as Sir was saying, some great, we've been to national finals for the under 14 and under 16, coming second and first in both of them. This season, we didn't quite get to national finals, but we've still had really good mini successes, I'd say, in our seasons, whether that being just performances, mini performances in a game to being the outcome of a high match, like a high standard match. And yeah, I'd say highlights for my hockey season have obviously been the national representations in that team, but also highlights have been like, for example, winning hockey games that we've maybe always wanted to win, considering we're playing a good team who we've never really beaten before. And I think those highlights are one of the best ones because everyone comes together as a team, everyone works together, everyone has the same goal. And yeah, it might seem like a small goal just trying to beat one team compared to like winning a national finals, but it's still a great highlight, especially when you may know people from the other team due to club games and stuff. And I think that's one of those big highlights in hockey, I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Also in the 1920s, they got going, established the annual inter-house hockey at Wellington. I don't know if that's still a thing that happens.
Yeah, the girls inter-house is always a good highlight, coming out in all the face paint. And yeah, very competitive. The boys with the lowest numbers, we haven't ended up running the last few years.
Right.
But the girls is sort of the thriving one now. Boys, unfortunately, with the introduction of football, just fitting the busy calendar in with a lot of other house sports now. Hockey's had to take a slide, unfortunately.
Mm.
More than anything, just to do with the safety element, because as Mr. Carr said, we've got boys who are very good playing at the top level, and then because of the numbers, some haven't been able to hold a stick. So having those two playing the same game is just not really part of the risk assessment. Wouldn't be allowed.
Which you would get in a house team.
Yes, yeah. Effectively, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I think too, you know, there used to be a junior league or a BIMS league that used to run on a Friday night. So it used to give the boys new to hockey in the good old days where it was rugby first term, hockey second term, cricket third term. That gave the boys the exposure and it helped with the safety element and that sort of stuff. So mainly driven by safety and numbers now with the boys. But as Rob says, the girls stuff is very entertaining and quite loud when they all come down and support. So it's good fun.
See, it's something that you've touched on there and that where we see throughout the history is, you know, to begin with, hockey had to compete for space against rugby. By the 1960s, people had stopped worrying that hockey was taking its players away from rugby and started worrying that it was taking them away from rackets or squash in the Lent term. Have you, Otty, have you found it difficult to find time to play all the sports that you might want to do?
I think in my first year, I found it a little bit challenging considering I was wanting to play three sports, hockey, netball and cricket, which are one of the three main girls' sports at the college at the time. And there was a bit of a clash, especially between netball and hockey being like one of the two main girls' sports as well. But I think as that was only in the first term, I'd say, and then as also the coaches were very adaptive and accommodating for those people who wanted to play two sports, because also in your first time you're trialing out for teams, you're trialing out that sport at the new school as well.
Mm.
And I think as the years have gone on, I've dropped netball and I've kept up with hockey and cricket, and I've actually managed to keep that both up quite well because yeah, they're different seasons of stuff, but also they still have times where I sometimes do have to pick, but it's all in my court. Like I don't have coaches pressuring me, which is quite nice as well. And even if like, and also communication, I think has been really important to have. And that's over the years, I've worked with my tutors in my house to be able to have a balance between those two sports that I want to play. And also for school life, like academics as well. Mm-hmm. And also club stuff. And overall it's worked quite well out for me because I'm still managing to play club hockey, school hockey, and sometimes club cricket and school cricket, which is four big like parts of my life. And I'm managing to keep up with not too much pressure from my coaches, and but not putting too much pressure on myself, which is quite good. But I think over the years that comes with just experience of being able to play those sports.
So it's possible to be good at more than one sport.
Definitely here at Wellington.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that's also changed over the years is rackets and squashes fixtures have become more midweek fixtures, where the hockey fixtures become weekend fixtures when you look at our big blocks. When it comes to our tier one competitions, they are mainly midweek fixtures because they fit around the big blocks. But we've got two girls who are national rackets champions, one of which is a GB hockey player, and they play in the first team. So hockey is a sport that complements certainly racket sports. Now, you know, we've got real tennis, we've got rackets, and we've got squash. So they're two sports that do work together really well. And I think over the years, we've found a way to sort of help manage it so that the kids are able to enjoy playing multiple sports, which is important.
Brilliant. Okay. Wellington's first overseas hockey tour was in 1936 to Nazi Germany, which I'll be talking about a little bit more, but in the, well, which I have talked about already in my introduction. After that, that was a bit of a one-off, but international tours got off the ground again in 1970 and have continued ever since. Can you tell us about that side of hockey?
I mean, yeah, we've toured, I think, a few times now. Certainly Rob and I have toured a couple of times together. We've been to South Africa a couple of times. We've just come back from Argentina. I know before my time, Jonathan White and Matt Oakman took a tour to Barbados. I'm not sure how much focus was on the hockey and more on the holiday and the trip there. But it's certainly something we like to do regularly. We've been to Holland too, and we try and sort of take as many people as we can on those trips just to give them an experience of the culture of the country we're visiting, but also try and find some really, really tough hockey. So I don't know, Rob, if you've...
And I also, you went to South Africa with us, right?
Yeah,
that was a great fun trip.
Yeah, South Africa was a great place to go. There was we had a really good balance of the hockey and also seeing around Cape Town, which was really good. And yeah, the standard out there was also quite good as well. We managed to... I can't remember exactly how we did, actually.
I think, fifth or sixth. I thought we played Millfield in the
quarterfinals.
Oh my God, of course we did. Yeah. So basically, the hockey was just amazing out there. Like, I mean, it matched our standards quite well, I think, as well. Gave us a bit of a challenge as well. And obviously, the scenery was just beautiful around it. The people there also so accommodating. So nice to meet people who... And meet people who play a sport that you play in a different country. Like, I think that's a really nice...
Yeah, even the recent one in Argentina, which Artie didn't go to, but we took the current lower sixth. That was even cool just after the game. They were all trading snaps and Instagram followers and bits and pieces, trying to learn a bit of Spanish and lingo and here and there. But I think that sort of just, the club sport culture and vibe across between two schools and countries was very cool.
Definitely building bridges.
Definitely... Just a very unique experience, which I think you don't quite get from non-sporting experiences and being part of a team, really.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in terms of improving your game, when I was asking Mike Borden about it, he was saying if you go to a different country, you might find people play in a different style and that kind of challenges you to adapt your style. Did you find that?
I'm trying to think back. I think probably... I can't remember too well their style of game, but...
You've done a few trips, though. You've been to Holland with Surbiton, haven't you?
Yes, so. I went to Holland with Surbiton, and obviously the hockey out there is to a very high standard. So I was actually in an under-14 team watching Mr. Farrington's first team out there. But yes, we managed to see him play at the very high level of the EHL, Euro Hockey League, and we played a few games out there ourselves, and it was just we played against the Germans out there in our like finals and we lost against them, but their style of hockey was very different. I remember it very clearly. They had their spectators on the sidelines with very distracting props, like with clapping hands, like throwing them around these plastic things, like shouting at our team when we would do something bad, like very, very loud on the sidelines, which we don't have as much, I'd say, here.
Hostile environment.
Yeah, very hostile environment out there. But yeah, and playing against a different style of play, I think, yeah, like they were saying, really does make you try, adapt your style of play. And yeah.
Cool. Now, of course, looking at all the historical hockey that I've been reading about and talking about was played on grass. It was field hockey. Which I'm told is pretty much a different sport from the hockey that you play now.
You have to ask the older gentleman.
I was going to say, have any of Brilliant. You played on grass?
So I probably stopped playing on grass at the age of sort of 14 or 15 in South Africa, and all went sort of artificial. When I first got here, we actually had, amazing turf pitches. On turf, it was called Turf One. That's where the so-called Gentlemen's 11 would always play, which was our fourth 11 hockey side, who was run by Mr. Dews at that point. So they would always play there. So we had three hockey pitches, some weekends, four hockey pitches on turf, which have now been converted into football pitches. We even had some of the Yearlings games played on Derby. And that was quite interesting, you know, particularly after a rugby season when they'd been churned up, and that, should we say, it wasn't as flat as a bowling green, which made for some interesting hockey. But very, very quickly things changed. You know, we are about to build our third Astra now. You know, particularly because of the growth in the girls game and how well they are doing. We've got, you know, we will have three outstanding surfaces. You know, not too many schools can boast that. So yeah, there certainly was some grass stuff, but it didn't
has
last
that really,
too long.
Has that died out sort of everywhere now?
Yeah, I don't think you'd see it very often now. Just because artificial pitches are much more common. They're cheap to build. They're not cheap to build at all, but I think for a sort of multi-purpose, whether the government can get grants and stuff, and it's, the game's just faster. It's a faster game. It's more entertaining to watch. And then I think the beauty is you can play a number of games on the same pitch in a day, whereas one grass hockey pitch would get hit up and destroyed for the next game.
Yeah, you can literally go back to back to back. So,
So your experience is all...
Yeah, I've never played on a grass pitch before. It's all been AstroTurf. Although I've played on sometimes the boys' football, the 4G grass. That was the closest it's been to a grass pitch. But everything else has been that really nice, flat Astro, which I'm very lucky to have played on.
I think you might have already gone towards answering this already, but I was interested in the difference between boys and girls hockey. Girls have played hockey almost ever since they arrived at Wellington in the 1970s. But as recently as, 15 years ago, they felt that they weren't getting the recognition that they deserved. In 2012, a girl wrote to the Wellingtonian saying that girls' sports teams do not send out multicoloured emails detailing when their match is being played, what songs to sing, and how there will be rewards for the loudest supporter. On average, about 10 parents turn up to girls' matches. The boys' first team rugby pitch has a multi-thousand-pound pavilion. The girls' first team hockey ground does not even have a stand. Do you still feel that there's any inequality like that?
In terms of the email stuff, definitely not. Like, we do send out emails as well. We have informal Instagram accounts as well, which we give information out as well. It literally nearly the exact same as the rugby, but including a lineup on the email and on our Instagram. So that is completely equal. In terms of the pavilion stuff, I think we're getting there. We're trying to get there in that. But we still have... We have a seating area which is quite recently new, and that does get filled up sometimes with our big like Friday night light games we play, and we encourage pupils to come down and watch through those emails. And we also have lots of parents turn up as well sometimes, most of the time, when we have home games. So like, it's definitely not there. It's definitely there. It's just hard to, also when we have so much. Wellington don't have like enough space sometimes to do it. So maybe with our third Astro, it might keep developing.
Yeah, and I think one thing to highlight there from a coaching perspective, and probably sort of unique to be able to talk about girls and boys sport, because we have girls and boys playing the same sport. The provision from an S&C, from a kit, from a video analysis, you know, all the, I mean, I don't think any sport here really gets, the pupils have the offer of as much one-to-one time as that. Rob will, I don't know, sit with them and do video work, or sit with them and do a one-on-one session on the pitch. So as far as S&C kit, you know, structures, infrastructures, all that sort of stuff, I think it's, we are pretty much there now. So yeah, whilst the school is 50-50, the girls have access to everything that the boys would have access to in whatever sport it is. I think that's fair to say.
No, definitely. I think that's a societal trend as well. The, you know, historical stuff in men's sport or money in the girls or women's sport is catching up, and it will get there and it will grow. And I think that's, yeah, as I said earlier, it's always been the challenge to bring the status of the girls' sport up to the same level, if not beyond the boys' rugby. And I think the initiatives that we've tried, for that's netball or hockey, the girls and Friday Night Lights and other things like that, has really sort of trying to bring that to the forefront more.
Does mixed hockey ever happen?
Yes, we've done it. We normally try and do an annual. It's traditionally been associated to the CBT charity game as well. So we've had a mixed hockey game, which is always good entertainment. And that normally happens, yeah, in the summer term. We did a boys v girls a couple of times, but normally we end up being the mixed games with the seniors. And the girls and boys in the Lent term will train together a lot as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a unique thing. It's brilliant for both parties. And yeah, it probably just doesn't really happen in many other sports, except for maybe cricket or tennis. But again, that invasion team sport is probably quite rare.
Great. OK, so I think I'll finish just by asking each of you either to talk about one particular highlight in your hockey career here, or one thing for the future that you're looking forward to. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first, and I'll start with sort of a highlight. Sort of when I arrived in 2007, 2008, we had one, maybe two sort of girls team, and having watched the program grow to where it is now with 15, 16 teams has been something really, really special. And there's been loads and loads and loads of people that have helped along the way with that. A particular highlight, I'd say, is probably our first national title. It was a group of girls who really did put girls hockey on the map. So that was pretty special. And that sort of group, I think they won under 14 nationals. The next year they won under 16 outdoor two. The following year they won under 16 outdoor and indoor. So there was a really, really special group. And that's really what got things moving forward and in the right direction. And it's just lucky to be here when they were here. And I say one thing for the future that I think the man sitting on my right will probably agree with is we still haven't won an under 18 title. And every year, about this time of the year, we sit down and we have a chat about how we are going to do it. But that's the one that I think would be the big hope for the future, to tick that box. Yeah.
I mean, I just echo those. I wasn't here when those girls first won, but I think that's always, for me, been like the standing on the shoulder of giants sort of analogy, where they did really set the tone. Huge highlight last year, we had an OWs girls match and loads came back. It was just like a fantastic occasion, and to keep that tradition and the legacy almost going. And then, looking forward just to be able to keep running the boys and girls programs concurrently next to each other. There's not too many schools that can say they can compete at both boys and girls. And I'd love for us to be sort of at that level for both, and keep scoring, making unbelievable experiences through hockey, basically, and sharing the love for the game.
Brilliant.
I would say my highlight for my time at for the Wellington Hockey so far has probably been maybe just my year groups as the years have progressed. So with my under 14 year group, we, like I mentioned a bit earlier, we became second in our national finals, which was a huge thing for us because we've just joined the school, we've just got all together, it was our first year together, and we managed to do very well, which was very good. And then the next year after that, we were the under 16 national champions, which was a huge, huge highlight. We came together really well as a team, I'd say, and yeah, had a great time there. Went back to Lee Valley, and going to Lee Valley is such a highlight in itself because, like, the school, we get the hockey department make it into a bit of a trip where we all stay down there for the night before. Everyone's very excited. We have team dinners at restaurants, and it's always just a big highlight. Everyone just looks forward to it. It's always just really fun environment. And then this year, we didn't quite get there, but we've like this still the group of people that I've managed to play hockey with, whether that being my year aboves and year belows. It's been such a good 2 year groups that I've been playing with, and I've made literally friends for life. Like, some of my best friends are through hockey, and I will always appreciate that so much. And looking forward, I mean, it's my last year at Wellington, but looking forward, I'd love to just stay involved with the OWs thing and being one of those like big like players who keep up with the OWs in terms of hockey and hopefully in cricket. And also there's in terms of Welly Connect and all of that stuff as well, staying involved with that and just, yeah, keep getting involved and encouraging other people as well.
Well, thank you all so much for taking part. I hope that this podcast will have been of interest to old Wellingtonians and present Wellingtonians as well. So, yeah, thank you once again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Pleasure. Cheers.